Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Phone, the ones and twos. Exciting times around the Enquirer studios. Sherry and I are discussing how cool our pens are that one of our coworkers gave us. So I feel that is the exciting news of the week.
I feel like we could do a whole episode on it now.
Thank you, Bob Strickley, for the gifts that you give. He's our breaking news editor. Anyway, we were just talking about that off the air. Sherry, our special guest today, ESPN's Jordan Cornette, St. Xavier alum, Cincinnati native.
Met him while I was in L.A. for the Super Bowl, and he is really just this, you know, dynamic presence. And I heard him say out of the corner of my ear that, you know, he's from Cincinnati, and I was like, I love that, when they go out in the world and, talk about how great Cincinnati is.
Yep. And looking forward to having Jordan, who played basketball in Notre Dame, and his late brother, Joel, who tragically passed away in 2016. We'll talk to him about that. And they were very close, and we're really big stars in basketball here in high school basketball at St. Xavier High. And looking forward to having Jordan on to just chat. It'd be great to have him. Sherry, first of all, we are in and I'm hearing the phrase, words, terms, constitutional crisis in the state of Ohio. We won't get into all the nitty gritty details of the redistricting kerfuffle and complete chaos. But the fallout of that is it's looking like, May 3rd primary may not happen. As news broke yesterday, as we record today on Wednesday, Secretary of State Frank LaRose sending a letter to the legislature saying, like, and I'm paraphrasing it, but, hey, we're getting dangerously close here to having to postpone this, or what are we going to do? Because military ballots go out here pretty soon. And, our coworker in Columbus, State House reporter, Jesse Balmert, had a story which if we had to, there's also talk of maybe even two primary elections, one which would include, you know, keep the one on May 3rd as the primary for the Senate race. But we would have to move, and I guess the governor's race would be the same, but then we'd have to have another primary potentially in August for congressional and state house races. And I think Jesse reported that could cost an extra $20 million in taxpayer money. This is, Sherry, I saw you tweeted about it, and
you know what? This is, first of all, it's reminding me of 2020 when it was like, what are we going to do? Oh, what's happening here? You know what? Elections are set for a reason, because so much planning and work goes into it on the election staff's part. This is the most critical part of our democracy, the most critical part that we know when we can vote, where we can vote, and that we can go and vote. And by we, I mean everyone. Now, that's right. We know everyone does not vote, and I wish we all did, but that is the underpinning of America. The fact that we're a democracy and we could go vote. And you cannot throw it into chaos like, well, if you want to vote for these races, you could go out on this day. And how about this other day for these other races? Not to mention candidates who are basically sitting by the phone waiting to hear what the districts look like, because it matters to them about, you know, where they live. Are they in the district? Do they want to run? Who are they putting up? Who would they be running against? You know, we don't write a lot about our state house districts. But I do expect to know what they are and who is representing my district. I would like to know that. And I cannot believe this is happening, honestly.
It is. The Republican Party, the Republicans who lead this state right now it's embarrassing. And it's unacceptable. And I don't know how much clearer I can be on that it is actually at an absolute standstill and a stalemate, and it's incredibly disheartening. And what is happening in Columbus right now, I think, disenfranchises people and spoils it, politics and government, even more for people at a time when it's already, they're already pretty down on it. And this just throws more on top of that. And
the fact that we've had to have court rulings on what's happening.
Multiple court rulings.
Is unbelievable, really.
It really is.
You would think that everyone would just say, you know, follow what is being asked of them. You know, voters put in a set of rules. Now the courts have spoken. You know, just follow the rules. There's always going to be politics at play. I'm not going to pretend otherwise and, like, think to myself. But this is just absolutely unbelievable. And quite frankly, it affects all of their state races and who's running against who and who's going to spend money in those races. Because I will be stunned if we have two primaries. If things come down to it and we really are at this critical point, they're just going to move it. They're not going to say we're going to have two primaries. I see no path forward for that. And that is going to affect all the state house races, which are what? Republican dominated. and they're fighting it out. I mean, if you watch Jeopardy like I do at night, it is one ahead after another for these races. And I think that they would like probably to see these settled too and know who, you know, is really going to come out on top there and kind of get ready for the general election in November. Anyway.
Well, and you throw on top of that, if they do just move the primary, the whole thing, and, you know, how does that affect the outcome even too? Because the money becomes a factor because you will have maxed out in your primary. And so you're all these campaigns right now are planning, talking about the Senate and the governor's races, and especially the Senate race, because that's the one that's still unknown. But everyone right now is planning for May. They've budgeted for a May 3rd primary. So they're all going for that. And then you throw in, if they move it back a month or 2 months or whatever, or 3 months, how does that affect the outcome of that race? Well, you leave it up to you to decide whether that would be good or bad, you, the voters. But, so there's all this different fallouts that can come from this. And all of it is, I think it's not good for democracy. I think you make a great point, about just the basic democracy. You do not mess with election day. You do not mess with election date. You don't mess with that. We saw it messed with in 2020? I lose track of time.
Because of COVID and they pushed it back at the last minute. And safety. That was about safety. And, you know, that is a once in a generation thing that you think might happen. This is a man-made
Interestingly situation. Too, Sherry, interestingly too on that is that it was the state lawmakers, the state legislature was like, they were the ones raising the most hell about, no way, you cannot move our primary. Well, they're now the ones who are really at the core crux, in the middle of this, holding this thing up. And so what is it? A different Speaker of the House at this point, but at the end of the day, Bob Kupp was still there. It's many of the same players who are saying, nope, let's dig in and fight now, who 2 years ago were saying, no, you cannot move our primary, and the governor cannot move our primary, and Amy Acton can't move our primary. So what is it? What is it? Anyway.
I guess it depends on the day.
You know what?
Real quick, speaking of Senate races, I think you had a scoop within this last week about that race and had to do with Rob Portman and who he might endorse. And like that, you weren't playing around. Tell us who that was, because he is on the campaign trail. I saw an email this morning.
Yeah, Rob Portman came out for Jane Timken, endorsed her. I'd had a long conversation with Rob Portman in January, and we talked a little bit about that. He didn't specifically name names then, but I could just sort of my hunch at that time was that, Rob Portman's wife, Jane Portman, has been very supportive, has raised a lot of money for Jane Timken. Rob Portman and Jane Timken both share the same political team. So I think there's those connections there have certainly all helped. And Jane Timken and Rob Portman worked very well together during his time in the Senate and her time as the Ohio Republican Party chair. And so I'm not surprised, but I think one of the biggest developments in this race so far, outside of the amount of money people are putting in outside of any individual candidate announcing they were getting in the race. I think this is was one of the bigger news stories so far, that the sitting senator is saying, I cannot sit back and just watch this chaos happen long enough. I've got to say, hey, this is who I want to replace me. Does it move the needle at the end of the day for the voters? Probably not. But Rob Portman is out there working for Jane Timken. She's already raised a lot of money off of the announcement of him endorsing her. And to me, I think the bigger thing here is that it kind of, I think it opens the door for a Donald Trump endorsement of Jane Timken. I predicted that that was what was going to happen. If Donald Trump is going to endorse, I believe he's going to endorse Jane Timken.
Turns out he might have more time to think about it.
Turns out he might have more time. That's right. Anyway, let's get going on politics.
A little lighter. Today's guest is, this is really like a personality profile type of guest. So let's do that.
And it's great to do it too. And let's bring on Jordan Cornette. Special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. Pleased to welcome. He wears so many hats for the ESPN family of networks. I'm just going to call him ESPN's Jordan Cornette. Jordan, how you doing?
Sherry, Jason, thanks for having me. I think, Jason, that's the safest way to go.
We'll talk about it. We'll get more in depth.
A lot of hats, but that probably is all encompassing.
Well, it's funny because the ESPN, your bio on ESPN uses the word versatile for you. And that's what you have the radio show. You have Sports Nation on ESPN Plus. You do some college basketball analyst work. You've done some football stuff. Talk to us about.
You grew up here,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So, let's talk about that, and then a lot we want to talk to you about, but let's talk about you growing up in Cincinnati.
Well, I think that's kind of plays a heavy hand in what my current situation is growing up in Cincinnati. Not everybody's a sports fan, but it's definitely a sports town. And so that was kind of installed in me at a very early age. We had our Cincinnati Reds and the history of the Big Red Machine. Back when I was coming up, the Bengals did have some measured success. And there was definitely a heavy influence of collegiate athletics, whether it be, I would think it's safe to say we led with college basketball in a college landscape in Cincinnati with the Bearcats and the Muskies. And the only garden I knew of was in Madison Square Garden. It was the Zag Gardens right there where the Muskies would play. And I saw some great players and some big-time personalities with guys like Coach Pete Gillen, the late, great Coach Skip Prosser, obviously Bob Huggins, what he was able to do. So I was always enamored with sports at a very early age. And I was always curious when I would watch games, as much as I wanted to be the athlete, I also took a deep interest in the broadcasters and the production value of how everything was put together, which I think was rare, but also very telling in what I wanted my future to be. And kind of here I am. So I would definitely say Cincinnati had a large influence on my career path and choice.
Is there a local broadcaster or former or current here in Cincinnati that you really took to?
I wouldn't say helped, but there's definitely been some along the way there in Cincinnati that have just, I've always admired. I mean, George Vogel's been doing it for such a long time, and I've always enjoyed what he was able to do and what he still does for the city, what he means to the city. So I remember watching him. I always thought it was cool when I was playing high school ball and he was covering me. I always felt like that was kind of a cool thing. And now to know that he's still doing it, representing our city in the way he is awesome. There's several along the way. I think a guy like Kevin Frazier, who got his start in Cincinnati as a sports broadcaster, and now he's doing ETV and he's kind of like a pop culture guy in the entertainment side, and shows another side of versatility that I've always admired. But he was covering the sport when I was high school sports, when I was coming up too. So
Fox 19.
Cincinnati's always been a breeding ground for talent. So there's several of them. And then like Lance McAllister's on the radio side, do a great job. Tony Pike, who's a friend of mine that does radio there in Cincinnati. It's a ton of talent there, and there was coming up. There still is.
And of course, there's Jason Williams, fill-in host on WLW.
I'm just doing it for fun.
You're not old enough to be a guy that I knew coming up when I was young.
Well, I'm actually older. I've just kind of come into it late. Yeah, a little later, just filling in here and there on WLW. But yeah, no, I And you know, you're saying ex alum, and talk about, you know, how you did. You went to Notre Dame, played basketball. What were you, when you originally went to Notre Dame, were you thinking broadcasting all the way, or you were thinking a career in broadcasting, or were you thinking something else?
Well, my parents, I think, assuredly wanted me to go into the business side of stuff when I ultimately was lucky enough to get a college scholarship and have a chance to be in that business school at Notre Dame. But I always was interested. Yeah, to answer your question, Jason, I was always interested. For one, I thought I was going to be the next Michael Jordan. And I think everybody who plays the sport assumes that. But what St. Xavier did a great job of, and the extension of that going to Notre Dame, did an equally good job of, was preparing me for, there's not a lot of Michael Jordans out there. Matter of fact, there's only one to this point. No one's ever gotten to that level. So having a backup plan. And for me, I knew that I was always interested in reading and writing. So I wanted to be able to express myself in a way where I could be creative. I was an English major in college. I was a film and TV minor as well. So I always had an interest in some sort of media, whether it be writing for a paper, whether it be producing television shows. I never in the immediate always saw myself as being a face that was talking about it, although that was a dream. I just always knew I'd be around it in some way, sports television. So Notre Dame didn't have a journalism school, still does not. But I think I picked up, you know, some skills on the writing side, because I had an English teacher who was a great influence on me, Mr. Downey. I don't know if he's any longer with us. I think he may have passed, but he was an influence on me in the English language. And I was always, you know, very interested in linguistics and how to express myself. And it came from that in high school and extended out into college. And that led me to my first job in television, which was as a production assistant. And I worked my way up from production assistant at the Big Ten Network, being one of their first hires in 2007, a year and a half removed from college, to associate producer, junior producer, line producing studio shows. I was in the truck running tape as a tape AD. I was feature producing. So I learned very much the ins and outs and the creative side, which was a passion, until someone gave me a nudge and said, you should try being in front of the camera. And the rest is a very brief history, but here I am.
That is such a quintessential, like, TV career, all the things you just mentioned. People never think about all of those jobs that put the shows together. But so many people, like, start out doing those things, and you have to know how to do it. And so it's an important – it's like the foundation.
Yeah, it really is, Sherry. And it's so funny because, yeah, I think that the casual viewer turns it on and is like, wow, this show's great because said host, he or she, does a fantastic job. And that's part of the formula. But the real geniuses, the real – a catalyst to any programming that you watch is the creatives behind the scenes, the tech people behind the scenes. I mean, that teamwork, which is an extension of athletics, and those concepts that I learned playing sports, is essential. I mean, if you're not all in line with each other and have a synergy, then you're going to watch a mess when you turn on the television. So I've always known, I think it's helped me as a broadcaster, knowing that I can only do so much. The heavy reliance comes on those behind the scenes. Having been that person, I have a great appreciation for that and understand just how paramount that is to any type of media success. So I've been lucky in that regard.
We love you, Phil. This is where we do a shout out for our own producer who keeps Jason and I on track at all times. And like, I don't know, yeah, that's like a miracle task.
you have the unique line on your resume in which you are the first person at ESPN to ever host the ESPN radio show with your spouse, Shea Pepler. You guys have a daily radio show on ESPN Radio. And talk about hosting a daily show with your wife.
Let me say something really quick.
When we exchanged vows, I certainly didn't know when we exchanged vows a couple of years ago in Hilton Head, South Carolina, that I'd be vowing to be a good colleague and teammate 6 days a week on the content that we provide for ESPN. But here we are. Jason, you mentioned the radio show we do on Sundays, but that's just one component of our working relationship at ESPN. And we're blessed to have the ability to do as much as we do. But we also do a 5 day a week television show on ESPN Plus.
Yeah, sorry. Thank you for correcting me. Yeah.
A franchise that's been revived. So we're doing that during the weekday mornings. And it was rough, to be quite honest, full disclosure, in the beginning, because we were trying to present ourselves in a way that we thought we should be on television. And we've always been confident and casual in our approach individually is simply be yourself. That's what yep. sells is if you're organic and authentically yourself on TV, people are drawn to that. And so we did that fine as individuals, but when we did it together, I think we were trying to manufacture something. So our first few shows struggled a little bit. I think anybody who listened to those, A, I apologize, but B, they would agree. But then we came off those shows and just said, let's just let people have a peek into who we are as a couple. And let's let in some of our personal life while also analyzing sports and giving our opinions. It's what we do in our living room. We give these opinions. Let's be unabashed in our approach when the lights come on. And that's where we really hit our stride. I mean, they gave us the radio show that was just supposed to be during football season a couple of years ago, and they really enjoyed it. So it extended past football season. We do it every Sunday around the entire year, and that propelled us into doing an ESPN Plus show 5 days a week as well. So we don't quite know what the future holds, but clearly some people have liked what we've been doing to get to this point.
I will say, when I mentioned that you were going to be the guest to some people I know, and I appreciate you being the guest so much, people were like, is that Shay's husband?
Yeah, I get that a lot. I get that a lot. And I've learned to appreciate that because she is immensely talented. And I just kind of follow her lead a lot of the times.
Do you guys, I think the pandemic is a kind of, really raise the issue or the topic of work-life balance and all that kind of thing. But you have such a unique thing in that you work with your wife and not just in the same building or the same company. You guys work on the same, whatever project together. And is it hard to get away from work, or do you do things in which you two distinctly try to draw that line between work and home, or is that just incredibly difficult? Or
yeah, not a problem at all? It's definitely an added challenge or obstacle for us given our workload. But I think for anybody in a relationship, they understand there needs to be balance in all things, whether it be balance and compromise, balance in parenting if you have children, balance in how you handle in-laws for holidays, balance with work, whether you have different jobs or not. It's a challenge presented to all of us. It's a little unique for our situation, but much like any other relationship, we find ways to work at it. And we found ways to be creative with it, quite honestly. I had a stretch where, straight from L.A., coming off the Super Bowl, which I got to be there for a fan and mixed in a decent amount of work because I can never really escape it. But my wife was unable to come out to L.A. So when I returned on Monday, heartbroken after the Bengals lost, but had a great experience, we went back into our grind of work, but I had to go fly out that weekend to Miami, Florida, down to South Beach to commentate on a Miami Hurricanes basketball game as they were hosting a very good Virginia team. So I looked at it and said, okay, I've been gone 4 days. I'm back for four. Then I'm flying back out to a pretty nice city. And I made it work where we were able to get a sitter, and I flew my wife out to kind of mix in, a date night down there in Miami while getting work in. And I think those are the small things where we know when we have small windows to enjoy each other outside of being parents or coworkers, we have to lean into that. And we've kind of found a good little formula and cracked the code in that regard.
That's great to hear. I know I can't imagine, just the challenges of trying to balance all that. And do you do a lot of prep for your show then at home, just sitting over the dinner table and, hey, what are we going to talk about?
It's funny you mention that, Jason, because I think that's one of the uniquely simplified things with our setup that's different from most is a lot of people spend time on Zooms or conference calls and setting up what they want to talk about. It's an ongoing Slack channel in the Cornette household where we're talking about all that stuff throughout the day. So I already know what her stance is, and we could be sitting there watching something like, jot that down, take a note of that, put that in your cell phone or send yourself an email. That needs to be in our show. So by the time a 24-hour span comes and we're going into our next day, we have systematically built a rundown for a show by simply living and breathing next to each other and consuming it together as we would even if we weren't doing a show. So that part has been remarkably easy for us.
Here's how Jason and I do it. We come in, we're sitting at our desks. We're like, what do you want to talk about? And then we sit down, we talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. But that speaks to a friendship and a chemistry that allows that to work. And yeah, that's also a big hurdle we were able to pretty much move past right away is, well, these two better have chemistry. They're married. You know what I mean? Like, so for us, like, that was an expectation. Well, that's always a big question mark for any duo that are trying to make something work. We're like, I promise you, we have some chemistry at a very baseline level because we are in this thing together, brought life into this thing together, share a mortgage together, and navigate an entirely different set of issues than most co-hosts do. So I think that put a lot of execs at ease as they picked us to do stuff together.
Where did you guys meet, and how old is your child?
So we have a 10-month-old together, little baby Joey. He's named after my late brother, who I sadly lost tragically and unexpectedly to a heart attack back in 2016. He lives on in several ways with our family, and it's just another way to honor my big brother, who is my best friend and mentor, by naming our little bundle of joy, our 10-month-old, after him. Mm-hmm. So he's little baby Joey. He was a COVID baby. He's been brought us nothing but joy and honestly not too many sleepless nights. We've got a pretty good handle on the little guy, knock on wood. I know it's not always that way as they get older, because I have a 14-year-old from a previous relationship who is solidly a teenager and thinks he knows everything, teaching me about the world and telling me how things work, because that's what teenagers do.
Isn't that so nice of them? It's just so kind of them.
Of our little guy, that's for sure.
How did you meet Shay?
Oh yeah. So me and Shay met working together. So this would have been back in 2014. So about 8 years ago, we were working for a digital network. At the time, it was called Campus Insiders. It's now Stadium, and they've really grown and taken off and kind of carved out a nice little niche in the digital space with sports. I was hired to be a college basketball analyst and host, and Shay was a host and sideline reporter. So we'd be doing games on the West Coast in really cool places like San Diego, L.A., San Francisco. And it was very much a business professional relationship. But we kind of, in those close quarters working together and relying on each other, developed a chemistry that started as a very strong friendship. And we had other things going on in our lives, other love interests, so never gave much attention to it beyond it being just friends, and people got along really well. And then as, you know, things started to present an opportunity, if you will, where we both found ourselves single, we're like, maybe this could kind of work. Full disclosure, I was the one who probably served as the guy pushing for her to see it that way. I was definitely the one who was like, hey, you know, I'm a good guy. I think we can enjoy a first date. And she caved after unrelenting approach from me. And the rest is history. We started dating and did that for a couple of years. And I mustered up the confidence or craziness or reckless belief that she'd be interested in spending her life with me. And I proposed in Turks and Caicos a couple of years ago, and we've been married for over a few years now.
That's awesome. And
Shay,
I feel like I know Shay because I've seen her enough as a Marshall Thundering Herd football fan, because so many of their games were on Stadium and Stadium Facebook, and Shay always was great at engaging the fans. And I know that was a new thing with having football games on Facebook, but she did a fantastic job with engaging literally live Facebook comments as the game is going on. And I'm sure that really helped her build her career to, you know, where she's at now.
Yeah, for sure. I think the experiences early on when you're really thrown into the fire, and when you're at the level we were, where we were green and just getting started, you know, they'll throw whatever they want at you because there's no equity built where you could say no. So there's a few of those moments for sure where she probably felt like, oh, this is a lot. But that birth by fire definitely helped her to grow in her career to the point where she is now, and here at ESPN and us doing stuff together and us having flourishing careers individually as well. It's been really exciting to look back on the path and how we got here. And I think we have to pinch each other to say, I can't believe, you know, this is what our life is now. Who would have ever imagined? But we do harken back to those experiences that have enriched our ability to grow.
You mentioned your brother, Joel, who tragically passed away in 2016. also, like yourself, a great basketball player at St. Xavier High. He went on to great things playing basketball at Butler, and then went on to a really great career. And I believe in Chicago, right? He was in Chicago.
Yes.
And yes. Can you? What do you want? Sorry, I didn't mean to sound like that way. I was like, what do you want folks to remember and know? Who don't know him? What do you want people to know about him? And for those who did know him, what do you want them to remember about him?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jason. For me, it's I never want people to forget the person he was. And I think a lot of times when you lose loved ones, you don't realize until you're in that awful position of having lost somebody that they're not going to mourn every day of their lives like they do in the initial when they first find out. And so when people are paying attention and reaching out and trying to do whatever they can to honor your brother, and they're posting about him or they're talking about him, those conversations, well, the circle of life and the cycle of this thing is it's a hamster wheel. And inevitably people go back to their lives and focus on, you know, growing their families or furthering their careers or bettering themselves. And naturally that point of emphasis or sense of urgency in talking about, you know, my brother who was lost, it dissipates a little bit. And that was a challenge for me. I'm sure anybody who's gone through loss, but that's the course of life. And what we've wanted to do to combat that is I don't expect people to wake up every day and spend 20 minutes meditating and trying to connect with my brother. That's not reality. But what we have tried to do is find a way to honor him and keep him present in our lives and be a person that can continue to be somebody who impacts change. And we've done that to the Joel Cornett Foundation, a foundation that we put on golf events, we put on March Madness events, several different things to generate money, where we've been able to generate scholarships for those from less privileged backgrounds to be able to attend a high school like St. Xavier. And the first young man to go through that, Lavelle Trimble, will be graduating this year. So that's a way to honor awesome. My brother. And we've given a lot to the Heart Foundation. We'll continue to do so this year. There will be a golf outing at Coldstream on the east side of Cincinnati, first day of August, and a dinner the last day of July, in which Charles Barkley will be coming in town to be the MC. So we've had guys like John Calipari support this, Chris Holtman of Ohio State, Brad Stevens of the Boston Celtics, Anthony Munoz of the Bengals, David Lapham of the Bengals. And we're only growing with bigger names to generate people to want to show up and contribute and be the impact that creates and generates change. So with that, to reflect on who my brother was, that's who he was. He had the heart, the biggest heart you'd ever seen. To know him was to love him. I can confidently say there's people I probably crossed in my life that would MF me if they could. That was not my brother. My brother didn't have an enemy in this world. He had the biggest laugh. He was a guy that liked to connect people and bring fun in any room. He was electric. He was magnetic. But he always wanted to help the underdog. That was such a big part of who he was. He wanted to lift while he climbed, if you will. And so that's what we try to do with this foundation is anybody who knew him knew that he just had so much love in him. He had so much passion in him. He had the biggest and most boisterous laugh. He just enjoyed fun and enjoyed finding the good in every situation. And if you ask anybody about the person he was, they would say he was passionate. He enjoyed having a good time. He was a connector of people. And he always wanted to see the underdog win. That was just such a big part of who he was. And probably with his background of being a former Butler Bulldog star at a school that didn't have really a big name and wasn't mainstream when he joined there. And now they're in the Big East and they've been to two Final Fours. And he was at the baseline and foundation of that success because there's so much passion and belief in the underdog could from him. So I could talk forever about him. Clearly, you guys, I get really impassioned talking about him, but he just left such a void in my life. And we try to, with the foundation, fulfill that as best we can.
Do you, and thanks for sharing that, Jordan. You know, and it's just, so it's wonderful that, you know, you guys are carrying on his legacy through the foundation. And, do you make it back to Cincinnati much, or is your family still here? And, talk a little bit about Cincinnati.
Yeah, Cincinnati still definitely is a large part of my life. My brother is laid to rest there in Cincinnati. So that'll always be a place that no matter what happens with family and if they ever elect to move, I will always come back there to visit my brother. Every time I come in Cincinnati, it's the first thing I do. It's the last thing I do is go visit him where he's been laid to rest eternally. My parents are still there. They've vacillated back and forth from a place that they'll ultimately retire at in Hilton Head, South Carolina, where me and my lovely wife Shay got married. But for the time now, and I do believe probably for as long as they're alive, they'll keep a place in Cincinnati, because they too would feel like they're abandoning my brother, who's laid to rest there. So there's definitely, my family is very much still back there. My little brother, my sister-in-law, and my one nephew are back there. My closest friends in life are in Cincinnati. So a big part of my life is in Cincinnati. I try to get back as often as I can, usually for at least one of the holidays, definitely for some time in the summer, and usually try to throw in just a random other trip there mixed in as well. So the foundation always brings me back too. So I'd say 3-4 times a year I get back to Cincinnati.
Love it. Sure, yeah.
I think that a lot of people, that pool is here. Jason is very familiar with visiting Hilton Head all the time, but
yeah, my parents live in Bluffton, right off the island. And
oh yeah, that's where my parents have a place, right there in Bluffton. It's a great place.
Are they in the? Do they live in a retirement community, or is it?
Yeah, they're in one of those communities, and the name is failing me. But we love Bluffton and downtown Bluffton.
Yeah, great.
We've been going there for about 6-7 years now at this point.
That's funny. Yeah, my parents are in this place called Sun City. Where you one of those, you drive the golf cart around and people playing pickleball.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. Man. It's nice, slow living. Everybody's smiling, and there's no hustle and bustle. It's a great way to escape and kind of take a collective breath and recalibrate.
Absolutely.
As we say here, that's so Cincinnati of both of you.
it is. Hilton Head very much is. Here. I mean, Hilton Head is the enclave of Cincinnatians, no question.
We got to get a skyline down there, Jordan.
I know. You know what, though? It's not the worst thing, because you got to take your shirt off a lot when you're out there. So maybe having too much skyline, as I work so tirelessly to have somewhat of a non-dad bod, but I've really leaned into, this is just who I am, babe. You just got to deal with it. I love me some skyline. I love me some Montgomery Inn. I love me some La Rosa's. I am who I am.
That's how That's how Jason feels.
Yes, exactly. This is it. It doesn't get any better than this. I apologize.
Well, Jordan, this has been fantastic, and I know you're busy right now, and you just joined us not too long after you came off your show, and I want to just let folks know, you and Che are hosting Sports Nation daily, ESPN Plus, 10 a.m. Eastern,
and yep, you got it.
You host your radio show during the football season on Sundays 1 to 5, is that right?
Yeah, and we're cranking it now every Sunday, even extending past football season. So you catch us 4 hours every Sunday.
Goodness gracious, that alone is a lot for a 4-hour show. So, all the best to you. Congratulations on your career and your trajectory upward. You and Shay both, and wish you all the best. And look forward to, let's stay in touch.
Well, guys, I think I failed to mention when I mentioned all the media stuff that I've always thoroughly enjoyed the Cincinnati Inquirer and the work you guys do. And it was always cool when I was a youngster being in the paper and seeing my face in there, but also seeing the all-important stories that you guys all cover. So, Sherry, Jason, thanks for thinking of me. Thanks for letting me reminisce on the city I love more than any. And a hearty hooday to you guys.
Hooday.
Hooday, man. Thanks so much, Jordan. Thanks again to Jordan Cornett for joining us here today. Really enjoyed our chat with him. Keeping it rolling with our Cincinnati guests. And this brings us to our That's So Cincinnati moment of the week. Fill with the drum roll. Drrr. Sherry, what do you got?
I was invited to a birthday brunch on Sunday. Somewhere I haven't been, I'd heard about. It's the Knox Joseph Distillery. At the OTR Stillhouse. So kind of the invitation is like, at the Stillhouse. And I was like, okay. I'd heard good things about it. And I have to say, it is an absolutely beautiful space. It is tucked kind of, I guess it would be, well, OTR, obviously, kind of north in the OTR. It's by the FOP Hall, which, I guess if you're a city reporter like I am, that's why you go up there usually. But, it was... I'm just really looking forward to summer. It's a beautiful space inside. There was a band playing, really just tons of room for the different parties that were in there. I do like my vodka sodas. Their distillery was, I mean, there were medals hanging in there, and that's what I felt like. It was just, it was really great, and I wanted to take a lot of the things home with me. There's a beautiful outdoor space with picnic tables that I just was really, Sunday was a nice day, so really envisioning spring. But it, I mean, really, just that's a, it's a new one. Check it out. Nice big space.
Awesome. We'll just go out. It's Knox.
Say the Knox Joseph Distillery.
Knox Joseph Distillery on Central Parkway, right?
Yep.
Yep.
At the OTR Stillhouse.
Kind of right there around FOP. All Sam Adams is right there around, right around the corner.
Drove by that.
So yeah, check it out. Another. It's great. It's great to see. Great to hear. Another business opening, and support those small businesses, restaurants, bars. And thank you for your support of this podcast. What a great segue that was. Hey, we'll catch you next week. Thanks.